Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, time for another episode of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. How are you today, sir?
Not bad, not bad. I'm alive. I'm employed. Could be worse.
It's weird. Like, the bar for how are you is has been gradually lowered to the extent of I'm alive and gainfully employed pretty much qualifies as great, right?
So. Well, right. I mean, I think, any conscientious person is in a spot where, like, if you're employed and alive and, like, your closest loved ones are alive, like, life is good. Weird, but that's where we're at right now. Hello.
We should probably do some housekeeping at the start of this show.
Okay, let's keep.
We're not taking a week off, per se. But we are gonna change the recording date a little bit.
Than the date, yes.
Yeah, the date. The day of the week. So
Thursdays are for chumps. So we're
right.
off of that.
Or people who wanted to talk about Top Chef episodes that aired on Wednesday night. So now that that's out of the way, we're gonna move to Tuesdays. So the next episode you'll get after this will be October 6th.
Boom.
And we'll remind you of that again when we do the homework later on.
And now the house is kept.
Indeed. We've done our admin, as they say across the pond, and we can move on to all the fine content we watched this week. Where should we start?
If you want to start with all of the fine content, I'm interested to see where this goes.
Okay, so you didn't like anything.
No, I'm not saying
that. Is that fair to say?
Okay. I'm not saying.
Because I would say of the three shows we watched, I liked one show.
Yes.
And
it's
I
the show you
show
already kind of like, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. I thought one Let's was talk about it.
And I thought one show was, had some good and some bad. How's that?
Interesting. I am interested to see... I don't want to give anything away. Let's talk about the good one first.
Okay. I mean, the good one for me is, I don't know that we ever settled on how to say the name of the show. Pen 15, I think is mostly what we're going with.
I think
it's supposed to look like Venus.
Yeah, I think the culture has decided to call it Pen 15. Because it distinguishes it. If you just start talking about penis, it could be any penis.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's just not, like, it's not great to say, hey, did you catch penis last night? You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right. How are you enjoying penis, you know?
Are y'all caught up on the season of penis? yeah, Pen 15 is better.
Yeah.
I agree. And, look, I know that I came into this a little bit higher on the show than you, and I would expect us to be in the same place because it's the same show. You know what I mean?
Like, I'm in a different place, though.
Oh, interesting.
I'm not sure you're wrong.
Tell me about this.
I'm not sure you're wrong that it's the same show. I just feel like I don't have a good answer. I probably just should have given it more of a chance last year. I still am not sure I totally get the gimmick. Other than they want to discuss really adult themes in the characters of children. So I guess, you know, at some level, if you want to be really funny, it's probably easier to be a grown woman pretending to be a middle schooler. But it's really funny. I watched three episodes, and the last thing I saw was them talking on the phone, looking at their vaginas in mirrors. And like, here's the thing. This show is, the conceit is funny, right? Because it's the conceit, which is essentially like, remember middle school? That was weird. And it makes you think about that very simple concept in new ways, new adult ways that I think is enjoyable, but also at some level, is it Maya Erskine? Is that what it is?
Erskine?
To me, there's a point at which this show just comes down to she's spectacularly funny.
Yeah.
She is just like the facial expressions, the way the character is written, which I think is, you know, something she largely dictated. I just think she is a star. And, you know, there's a level at which that's enough for me, even though the show is also really funny and well written and clever. Her sort of star quality is enough for me.
That's interesting, because I sort of look at them almost the pair of leads almost in like a Broad City way.
Oh yeah,
I don't think the show. I think Broad City is a funnier show.
Yes,
I think
Broad City.
Either one of them as the star is sort of what I mean by that.
Oh, I think that's true.
And not be wrong. You know what I mean? Like,
I think either one could be looked at as the lead. Or even the star. I mean, look, the wrestling thing is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, Anna Conkle is also very funny. I'm not trying to diss her at all. I'm just saying, for me, you know, Maya Erskine, whatever it is, kind of makes the show.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I mean. Like, I'm not arguing with you in any way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you had just done that same thing and said, and I forget her the name of the other actress,
Conkle.
But if you, yeah. If you just said she was a star, I wouldn't have really argued with that either. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Yeah. Because I think both performances are great and interesting. I think also, like you, I probably personally prefer Myers-Kim's performance a little bit, but they're great. The show is funny, and it's a lot of the things that you think potentially could be weird. The fact that, you know, there are these 30-something actresses who are, you know, on-screen romancing, like, 13-year-old boys, like, mm-hmm. That should be really, like, almost gross, and it never really feels that way. Like, it all feels true, which I think is a testament to how sort of 13 they play. You know
yes.
what I mean?
Oh yeah, they are very good at playing that age. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Their characters are obviously a little bit over the top.
Yes,
you know what I mean, but there's so much about the real experience of being 13 and like the real, you know, I mean, like you've got a lot of over the top emotions at that age, right?
So, yes. Well, the characters are very over the top, but they inhabit the like emotional turbulence of a preteen incredibly well.
Yeah. And I think there's something in the writing, I think, that really that helps you understand that, you know, or mm-hmm. or that understands a lot about what it's like to be 13.
Mm-hmm.
That really is sort of the secret weapon to making this show click.
That makes sense to me.
You know, and they sort of nailed just all of the awkwardness, like that pool party episode. Like every time one of them went to like approach the boys,
oh my
you
God.
Know,
yeah.
just the, like the lead up to them getting there and starting the conversation was so hilarious and like real, you know what I mean?
Yep.
There are a lot of little details in the show that are, I think, really smart. And none of that makes it really fun to watch unless the show is really funny, which I think it often is. So
yeah, it is. And thoughtful as well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I'm glad to see you coming along on that one. I was surprised when you were like totally out.
I was never totally out.
Pretty out. Yeah.
I just didn't love it. And I do think I will now watch the entirety of this season and quite enjoy it. Also,
awesome.
I if you enjoy Maya Erskine, she was also in a film alongside the Quaid kid. Jack Quaid called Plus One that came out last year, I believe, is on Hulu.
I'd like to check that out because I would sort of be interested to see what she's like, you know, in a more traditional role.
It's like a wedding-based rom-com.
All right. Yeah, sure.
I liked it.
Where am I going?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not. I'm just saying it's not. You're not going to see her, like, you know, teasing the Academy or anything, but it's a good movie. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
Okay. Let's move on to Ratchet, which I think we were maybe at sort of different places in our levels of excitement for coming into the show.
Well,
Ratchet is the, I guess, prequel to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and sort of the origin story of Nurse Ratchet.
Is it, though?
I mean, I that's the way it was built, I guess.
I think that's the right way to introduce it.
Fair enough. Starring Sarah Paulson and from creator Ryan Murphy, who we've talked about a bunch on this show.
So I know that the words you just said are starring Sarah Paulson, but you said it fast, and it kind of sounded like sorry, Sarah Paulson, which I think... If you wanted to write the shortest possible review of this show,
sorry, Sarah Paulson.
The two-word review of Ratchet. I'll tell you what my review of Ratchet would really not do if they hadn't done it first, is mention One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Because this has no attachment or relationship to that whatsoever. And really, my only interest in it was that. I mean, frankly, I may have had a higher level of excitement because I love One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's one of my favorite books and one of my favorite movies. And I was interested to see how they tied themselves to that content. What was this to explain the character? You know, that thought experiment is interesting to me. Tell me what happens to explain the background of a character like Nurse Ratchet from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. My trepidation about Ryan Murphy was equal to yours, I would say. I just was more excited about the potential of the IP. But there is no IP here. There is no relationship other than the name and the fact that she seems to be a nurse. And this is as Ryan Murphy'd a Ryan Murphy is Ryan Murphy ever Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, it does really drip Ryan Murphy.
There's
if you're
moments
not, familiar where... with his work, which we just going to run through a few of them,
okay,
just to give you an idea. It's Glee, Nip Tuck, American Horror Story, Pose, The Politician. I think that ought to give you at least somewhat of an idea. Both of the kind of work he likes to do, and I would say the general up and down quality level of his work, because sometimes it really clicks in, and you know, I mean, American Crime Story is great, you know what I mean? The Politician's pretty ridiculous, you know, and then there's a lot in between, and I would say of all of the Ryan Murphy shows I have seen, I think this is probably the one I think is the least successful. It's just, I don't know. Everything about it was absurd.
It is the worst. I don't know that there's much doubt of that. And I liked Glee when it came out. It was original and interesting. I'll cop to that. It definitely got old at a certain point. I also liked American Crime Story, the Versace thing.
And the OJ.
And the OJ one, those, I think, maybe because they're real stories, were grounded enough in something worth watching that Ryan Murphy's sort of tricks and flips and curiosities of the way he shoots and edits things, all that was fun to me. It was like a fun twist on the true story, right? This is unmoored trash. So when you said, was this the disaster you were talking about?
This is the disaster.
Okay.
This is the disaster for me. Yeah.
I think we're actually kind of in the same place on most of the stuff we watched this week. Because, yeah, I just, Like, this was a big fat pile of why. That's what this was. I mean, this isn't really a spoiler. There were multiple moments in the first episode where, like, the world just turned green.
Yep.
And it's like, what? Huh? Like, not for a particular reason. Just like, it was literally like he was sitting in the editing bay watching the final cut. And then the editor was like, I think we're done. And he was like, I don't know. What if we made this 3 seconds green and then this other 5 seconds green? And the editor was like, what? He was like, yeah, just green. The whole thing, green. Just make it all green. And the editor was like, all right, dude. I'm getting paid a lot for this, so I'll do whatever you want.
Maybe they get into this at some point. But why is the mental hospital office, like, so nice?
Yeah, it's weird.
I feel like...
Because it's, like, not a good mental hospital, necessarily.
And it's a mental hospital, but it's got a waiting room that, like, yeah, the ad agency and Mad Men would have killed for. With, like, all of these, like, fancy vases and, like, crazy lighting fixtures and,
you know, it's
art
funny.
Deco couches. And,
you
like,
talked
like,
about...
What is this?
Yeah, you talked about how, like, pleasing and impressive the attention to detail was in Pen 15. And this is an example of, like, to paraphrase Dave Chappelle, when attention to detail goes wrong.
Yep, agreed.
Like, this is clearly meticulously done. He clearly put a ton of effort into the details, but I don't know who those details appeal to, other than if you just like the theatrics of Ryan Murphy specifically, for like, in and of themselves, because that's all that's happening here.
Yeah. And clearly, they spent a lot of money on it. That's the other thing I would
say. And they're paying him a boatload of money. And look, maybe there's a lot of people who like this, and fair enough. It's not for me to judge your life choices, but
I will say the Rotten Tomato meter has creeped up a bit since we assigned this, and is now on the fresh side, which also surprised me.
Well, I mean, we don't need to do this bit, this segment again, because we've talked plenty about how it really seems like a lot of critics have lost the thread on substance.
Yeah. Yeah, I regret that. It's probably a wider conversation.
I mean, it's the same conversation we have when everyone freaks out about, you know, Dunkirk or... right?
Like, yeah.
This is also, I mean, I guess if you made me give Ratched a compliment, it would be that it is meticulously shot and very, I don't even want to say it looks good, because I don't understand why it looks anyway, but I think it's well executed for what it is. It's just nothing. It's a well executed nothing. Does that make sense?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, it's even less than Dunkirk, but it's in the same way. It's like, if all you're here for is some sort of specific display of cinematography talent or something, I guess you're getting it.
I honestly, it's not that the cinematography in a lot of Ryan Murphy shows has been good, because I think it has, but I don't get the sense that there are a lot of people watching his shows for that.
I don't know.
I think if you're looking at his fan base, there are certain things that they like, and I'm gonna guess cinematography is not really anywhere in that list.
Yeah, that's probably true.
I don't know, maybe I'm not the intended audience for this.
No, I mean, I think you're almost certainly not the intended audience for this. Is that up for debate?
Yeah, no, fair enough. You're right. But this is a strong do not recommend, and I will never think about this show again. So there you go from me. I'm happy to leave it behind. It's interesting to me, because I think reviews also sort of framed my notions going in of LA's Finest, which I think had the worst, one of the worst Rotten Tomatoes scores I'd ever seen when we picked it out. It's also creeped up a little teeny bit. It's now about 20%.
I mean, I just, and that's where,
I think it was at 7 when we decided to watch
right.
it.
And look, this is where, and I think you'll agree with me, I just, I fail to understand. Because in as far as I'm concerned, while this show certainly has its limits and is not, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, hey, make sure you watch LA's Finest. You're never going to believe what they've got on Fox right now. Like, I just don't think there's even an argument that this is a better show than Ratched.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, it's 100%. Just, it's better acted, it's better conceived, it makes more sense. It I can at least see the reasons to watch and enjoy it, you know? It's an action TV show. That's what it is. It's Bad Boys with ladies on TV. That's what it is.
Yep.
And if that
you can
sounds,
see the pitch.
Yes,
to be honest.
That's exactly what they said. And someone was like, you have Gabrielle Union? And they were like, yeah, and Jessica Alba. And they were like, it's a go project. Like,
yeah.
And
make the women the badass.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And it even has, you know, Zach Guilford, my old Hebrew school classmate, and another guy playing the, like, other cops from Bad Boys, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the women keep showing them up. It's going to be a fun time. Like, it's not going to be groundbreaking. It's not going to be anything you haven't seen somewhere before. And it's going to be fun. And Jessica Alba and Gabrielle Union are every bit as believable as roughneck cops as Will Smith and Martin Lawrence were. So let's do this.
Say, not all that believable, but
no, it's ridiculous. but it's the same thing. And look, that formula worked 20 years ago. It worked last year, and it works for me now in that way that, like, man, if it's late and I don't feel like using my brain too much, like, let's have some fun with the lady cops who kick ass. It sounds like a good time, and it was.
This is absolutely fine as a you know, as a palate cleanser or I don't want to think too much kind of show.
Right,
like you get some action, you're gonna get some wisecracks. You know, everybody in the cast is competent. Like having Evan Handler as like the cliche sort of
he's Joey Pantoliano.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
he
it's,
comes in and brings the energy as the
yeah.
captain for a second. And it's
look,
great.
Man, they really followed the Bad Boys formula to a T, to the point where they have the same bad guy. Like it is, and you know what? Like I don't love that everything is a remake and nothing is new under the sun in creativity anymore, although that's an exaggeration. We still get plenty of good stuff. But I don't love that habit of just reproducing old content. At the same time, I respect the fact that they did this right. Because it's not hard. And so many people screw it up. Like, Bad Boys is an evergreen formula. Except people were really interested in seeing women in those sorts of roles these days. So let's do that. And let's not tinker with it in dumb ways that mess up a perfectly good formula.
Right. And, you know, this is, look, I get why this show got made. I'm a little surprised that it never aired on Fox before, because apparently it was on something called Spectrum TV, which I don't know what that is.
Huh.
And then Fox, like, this show has already aired, basically.
Really?
And Fox picked it up when they needed some programming in the summer.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, yeah, the whole season's done and all of that. But it seems like a great Fox show. I often sort of thought, like, you know, if you were going to put this on HBO and try to make it, like, good, try to sort of aim for something, like, what would the show be? Because, look, the writing is not great. Like, the character development is not great.
No,
like,
and
it's
look,
not a great show.
No,
it's
and
not
it,
trying to be either.
Right, and it was one episode. So maybe the, you know, I don't think it's out of the question that the writing gets a little better and, like, they you know, the writers get to understand the characters a little better and you start to see some funnier stuff. This feels like a pilot that a computer could have written. But
yeah.
But at least the programmer wrote the right program. You know what I'm saying? And so
right. It
has some room to grow into itself, if not, you know, anywhere to go really deeply. And it's a Fox show. It's fine. What confounds me is that when this is at, you know, 20% and Ratchet's at 70%, to me, that's kind of saying that 50% of television critics thought, A, that Ratchet succeeded in something, and B, that this show attempted something and failed. And I don't think either of those things is true. This show is exactly what it's trying to be. And look, maybe this is a B to start, and maybe they can get it up to a B plus or something. But like, this is, they didn't even say they were trying to get an A. And yeah. Ratchet is like, check out this A plus, and it's a D. You know what I'm saying? So I don't understand where the, like, those are the critics I don't understand. The people who watched Ratchet and were like, nice, that succeeds in like an elevated thing that deserves a good rating. And then watched LA's Finest and were like, boy, that sure failed to send the social message it was trying to send. And it's like, I don't know what you watched.
Yeah, I think a little bit of that is somewhat the meter itself. You know what I mean? Like you're, whether it's rotten or fresh, right, it's just a pass fail sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Well, but that's kind of the point, right? Is like, what scale are you grading on? And to me, if you gave Ratchet the thumbs up and LA's Finest the thumbs down, the only explanation for that is you're grading on the wrong scale.
Yeah. It's hard for me to watch those two shows in tandem and just say that Ratchet was the more successful of the two.
Right. Exactly.
The
it doesn't make any sense.
Is that it aimed higher? That's it.
It you did aim I mean? Higher. And in many ways, that to me is why it deserves the thumbs down. It's like, ostensibly it aimed higher, but did it even? Like, it definitely didn't get higher. I'm not sure it even aimed higher. It just looks like something that ought to have aimed higher.
You're right. You might be right there. Let me ask you this one thing. It's sort of a non-toy department question about LA's Finest. So I watched this yesterday. Which was the same day of the Breonna Taylor grand jury verdict.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an issue.
You know, there's something about, obviously this was made way before any of that, but not way before police violence was an issue in our world. And there is something about a show where you have cops, you know, engaging in shootouts in, you know, at Santa Monica Pier, and blowing up, you have a cop, you know, blowing up a club, and you know, all of these things that just seem now in light of like real life to be less glamorous than they used to. And I just don't know. Like, I know, you know, Mike Schur, who makes Brooklyn Nine-Nine, has sort of talked about how they're not going to be able to just make a show about cops in exactly the same way that they did before. Like, do we need to adjust this in some way? Because there is something to me about just that sort of basic thing, that bad boys thing, that is sort of less entertaining and does sort of feel like, why are we glorifying this? You know what I mean? Or why are we not thinking at all about the actual ramifications of people for this behavior, you know?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing, and I'm not quite sure what to do with it, because that argument definitely triggers a similar response in me to the arguments about, like, the children playing violent video games are leading to school shootings. One would think adult humans are capable of distinguishing between action movie and what real people should do in real life. On the other hand, evidence suggests perhaps they're not. My suspicion is, however, you could get rid of every movie involving a vigilante cop or, you know, glorifying police violence, and very few people's opinions or worldviews would change. That's my instinct. There's no way to be sure.
I'm sort of the other way on that, and don't get me wrong, I'm not blaming LA's Finest or any of these things like that necessarily specifically for any of this, but I do think there is sort of a cumulative effect, you know, because there's no doubt who the heroes of this story are. And if you think about, you know, the charges yesterday, right? The one guy that did get charged, was charged for indiscriminately shooting into other apartments, right? That happens, I would say, four times in this episode, if not more.
Yeah.
Right? There's a shootout in the beginning in a convenience store.
Yep.
There's a shootout in a club.
Yep.
Or a near shootout, I guess, in a club.
No, and I mean, look.
Yeah, like there's so much collateral damage, you know.
This show, like every Fast and Furious movie, like every cop movie ever, basically, is filled with unconsidered collateral damage. I'm just not. That's like the entire industry of action movies.
Yeah.
Other than superhero movies, pretty much every action movie has like a cop or federal agent who's blowing shit up and leaving a trail of destruction and is the hero. Or better yet, like a criminal with a heart of gold who's blowing shit up and killing people and the obvious hero. So like,
yeah,
I don't
mean, there is
know.
The, there is sort of the classic, like, we can't get the shot. There's somebody in the way, you know, like you do see those scenes every once in a while, but yeah, you're right. Like that, it is a staple.
Yeah.
And I feel like that, maybe that's something that we ought to look at least.
I don't think you're wrong. I also don't think it makes any sense to talk about, you know, a show like this in the context of fixing that problem.
Yeah, agreed. I'm not, again, not putting this on LA's Finest.
No, I know you're
I'm
not.
I'm only bringing it up because I happen to watch it on the day that this other thing happened.
I think you're right. I think it's a part of the culture that is deeply problematic. On the other hand, I still tend to believe it's pretty that, you know, action movies and television to me are still pretty far down the list of things that need our attention in the fight against police violence.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is something we have to fix. To me, it's a little bit more of, okay, if this show is supposed to be turn off your brain escapism, like the world, I feel like, has made that harder for me. Like I couldn't watch this and completely shut my brain off and not think about what's happening in the larger world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's fair. It makes sense.
So, you know, and particularly, you know, because the show stars Gabrielle Union,
mm-hmm.
You know, who's pretty visible on the fight, you know, on the front lines of the fight for, you know, social justice.
I do wonder if anyone has asked her about that.
Yeah, I kind of do too.
But
I definitely thought about it.
I imagine her answer would be sort of what I was saying, which is essentially, yes, I have thought about it, and I think it's a television show, you know? And I think people need to understand.
My guess would be her answer would be something about, you know, empowerment for black women and
right.
How few roles there are for them in Hollywood. And,
well, but both. I mean, I think it's both things. It's like, look, this is a lead role on a television show for a black woman playing a strong police figure. I think that's a big deal. I think she'd be right. I think she would also say it's important for people to be able to distinguish between an action television show where stuff blows up everywhere and the way things should be handled in a real life situation. Like, that's as important as understanding that some calls need a mental health professional and not a police officer, right? Like, these are all parts of it.
It is interesting. And I also think it's interesting, like, that this is not a show that is, or this show is not at all afraid to wink at the actresses' real lives.
Oh no, they made a Miami Heat joke with John Sally. Joey, I was watching it with my wife, and she goes, "Is that a reference to her husband in real life?" And I was like, "Yeah, and that guy there used to play for the Lakers." And she was like, "Oh, and he played that same role in Bad Boys." And I was like, yes, that's where we are here. That's the sort of show we're watching. And I think, again, could there be a clearer indication of, like, look, guys, we're just having some fun here, okay? Let's just all chill out and have some fun.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's what they're doing. They're like, hey, we're going to have some fun. We're gonna throw these people some sexy dresses for no reason every now and again.
Yes.
You know, we're going to have some threesome jokes. We're going to have, yeah. You know, we're going for it.
We're keeping it loose. We're blowing stuff up. It's a formula that is paid off repeatedly.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know if recommend is quite the word, but no, like, if you're looking for this kind of fair, you could do a lot
right.
worse.
I think you can trust this to be a pretty good version of exactly what you think it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's fair. I could see myself watching another episode of this. I'm not going to look for it. You know what I mean?
No, but like, again, I would go a little further than that. I would say, like, beyond just seeing myself watch another episode, I'm going to leave the DVR on record for this. And someday when I'm lazy or sick or something, I'll probably watch 5 of them, you know?
Yep. All right. There you go. You want to do a check-in into Lovecraft Country real quick?
Yeah, sure.
I really enjoyed this week's episode. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you would call it a bottle episode.
I would.
I guess you probably could.
I would, yeah.
Because it really only features one character who's a regular on the show. The main character of this episode, the monster, I guess, has made a couple of brief appearances in other episodes.
What do you mean?
Yeah, she's very loosely connected. Like, she was on the phone in one episode.
Oh, yeah, she was on the phone twice.
Yeah. So, but other than that, it has no real connection to the other episodes. It's almost entirely about her.
Yeah, no, it's a bottle episode for sure, I would say. Did you like it? I liked it.
I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like many of these episodes, it's like the way that it's shot was just gorgeous.
Yeah,
you know, and more than that, like, I don't think that the show works 100% of the time. It can be confusing. Did you catch Reggie Miller?
What? No.
Talking about Lovecraft, you know, because they got to do promo reads.
Oh! I thought you were saying he made an appearance in the show.
No, he's not in the episode. But like during one of the playoff games, he started talking about it. And how he was having trouble following along, and I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, although honestly, I thought, like, the way he said it made me think, yeah, this might not be for you, Reg. Like, yep. He didn't say it like you. He said it like a guy who literally has no idea what's going on in any way.
Yeah, but I also been watching it and not having any idea what's going on is a not unreasonable position. Like, it's
confusing. It is confusing. I'm not saying it's not confusing. I'm just saying, like, there's like the way of recognizing its confusion. Like, there's some things here that I don't understand, as opposed to like, I have no idea what I'm watching, which is what Reggie Miller seemed to be expressing.
Yeah. I may have told this story on the pod before. But once upon a time I went to see, this guy Yellow Wolf at, like play a radio show.
Yeah. I know who he is.
You know, like one of those like radio festival shows where, you know, mm-hmm. 6-7 bands on the bill and they're doing short
like
sets
weird,
or whatever.
He's like a weird rap rock guy, yeah, sort of thing.
Yeah, he does a little bit. He's mostly a rap dude. Throw some rock in there a little
yeah.
bit. So, you know, he's playing on this show that's mostly like pop alternative bands, mm-hmm. and he's got a 30-minute set, and in the space of this 30 minutes, he thanked the wrong radio station for putting on the show. Led the crowd in an a cappella sing along of Garth Brooks' "I Got Friends in Low Places,"
uh-huh.
which killed, by the way.
Yeah, of course it did.
Tied scarves around the microphone and then lit the scarves on fire.
Whoa!
Which I knew was not a bit because the roadie was freaked out. And in the course of his 6-song set, did not play any of the 2 radio singles that got him invited to the show in the first place.
Right.
And I remember watching this whole thing and just thinking, God, I have no idea what's going to happen next.
Right.
And how long it had been since I'd been at a show where I felt like that. I'm not saying the show was great.
Right.
All the time, but it was entirely unpredictable.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like Lovecraft Country gives me some of that. Like, I love the feeling of having no idea what it's going to be from one week to the next.
I think that was a great analogy that you just made. It doesn't work all the time, but that has not bothered me at any point. Right? Like, there are times where I'm like, all right, I don't totally know what just happened, but fair enough. Let's keep rolling.
Yeah. Well, and it's so visually interesting all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that really helps. And I think this episode was just a showcase for that. Like, the, you know, the way that they depicted Korea was beautiful.
Yeah.
Weaving in of the Judy Garland.
Yeah.
You know, just that, all of it was just a great idea. And then taking, you know, the racism concepts of the show and transporting them to Korea and their own issues, and just showing how this stuff is kind of everywhere, but in sort of, you know, different insidious forms, I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
And I loved Jamie Chung as the lead. I thought she was tremendous.
I agree.
The monster.
And I didn't realize who she was until you told me afterwards.
Yes. Challenge alumni, Jamie Chung, who I don't think did a lot of challenges.
Maybe only one, but
maybe two.
Yeah.
But she was on the Real World San Diego.
Right.
Back in the day. That was, I believe, Brad's season, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know.
To give you an idea of how long ago it was.
It was a long, long time ago.
Yeah, it was a ways back. But it brought up this this question for me, which is Jamie Chung, who has starred in a few TV shows and been in several movies, the most successful person to do the challenge, the most successful challenge alumni?
Yeah, and my knee-jerk answer was, yeah, she probably is. But also, I don't have a very good memory and couldn't think of a lot of other good candidates besides The Miz. So tell me who else is on that list for you.
Okay, so, well, you got The Miz, who,
yep,
you know, WWE champion, mm-hmm, reality TV star. I think there's a real case for him.
Yes.
You've got Sean Duffy, who is a U.S. congressman, a terrible U.S. congressman, but a U.S. congressman nonetheless.
Interesting.
And I believe today is now he's a Fox News contributor now that he is retired from Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I guess technically his wife, who was also on the challenge, Rachel Campos, was also a Fox News contributor. I think you have Johnny Bananas, who has done some TV outside the challenge.
Not much, though.
Yep. And then I had Kit Hoover, who's the host of Access Hollywood, but she only did Road Rules, I found out. She did not actually do a challenge, so I got a little confused there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is Jamie Chung.
And other than that, then there's Kyle, who's, you know, just Kyle.
Being Kyle might actually be the greatest success of any challenge alumnus. So I don't want to rule that out. I want to make sure that is given its appropriate consideration. But otherwise, I think it I don't know. I mean, I think this fundamentally now comes down to what's your definition of fame, or like what sort of fame is better than the other. But both The Miz and Jamie Chung are doing things that require great skill and also, you know, a significant amount of, like, appeal. So either one of them, I would say, is a good choice.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because I do sort of feel like U.S. congressman might be more impressive if you're just talking about blank. But, man, Sean Duffy was a really bad congressman.
Well, and like... People like that, to me, don't deserve the credit for becoming a congressperson because they didn't do the actual work. They just used their notoriety. So, like, the getting elected is basically just being famous. And
right, and if you never right, he ran in a district in rural Wisconsin too. So it's right. like being famous is a pretty big edge.
It's like the Eddie Murphy. What is it? A Distinguished Gentleman. The name you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that. He gets elected to Congress because he has the same name as the former congressman who just died. and that's his campaign, you know, vote for whatever the name is, the name, you know, and like that, I think is really a lot of what American politics is, to the point where we've had dead guys win. I'm fairly certain.
Yeah. And look, and I will say this in Sean Duffy's defense, right? There are a lot of members of the U.S. House of Representatives, like over 400, right? So it does take something to stand out a little bit, you know what I mean? As a U.S. congressional rep, but again, the fame already there gives you a leg up as well.
Yeah, that's my point. Is like I don't see that as an additional achievement to the same degree that like becoming a successful actress or a WWE superstar is.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that The Miz is almost definitely the most famous of these people? Like, I think he's more famous than Jamie Chung.
He's definitely more famous as himself. I wonder if like the number of eyeballs they have isn't similar though.
Yeah, I would say that that's probably true. Although The Miz has his own TV show, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so that, yeah. That's, but a lot of people lot of see the movies and TV that Jamie Chung is in. They just might not identify her as a specific. I don't know. I mean, you're right. The Miz is definitely more famous. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Because so, yeah,
I also just think it's crazy that he created that Miz character like while he was actually on The Real World as like a dumb 20-year-old and then like lived into it. You know what I mean? Like,
dude, he really is. I mean, that's why I say like I don't want to minimize what he's done. But like if you just add up the people, I mean, she was in Hangover 2. She was in Big Hero. She's a voice in Big Hero 6. She was on Once Upon a Time, the ABC show. So, like, if we're just talking about people who've seen their work, I think it's probably close. And I think, in fact, Jamie Chung might win by a bit. But
plus,
there's no doubt.
San Francisco native and Lowell High grad.
Shout out. But, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that The Miz is more famous as The Miz than Jamie Chung is as Jamie Chung.
As Jamie Chung. Yeah. No, it took me a minute to figure out, even in this, that I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Jamie Chung.
And honestly, if 6 months ago you'd been like, blah, 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 Jamie Chung, I would have been like, who? You know?
Yep.
But that's true of a lot of pretty successful actresses. I'd have to be like showed and reminded to know who they were.
Yeah,
so
fair
who
enough.
Knows?
And I got a feeling she's going to get more work after this because she, I
oh,
really
she was great.
Tremendous.
And
episode.
This is
it
a
kind of
yeah.
leaps off the screen.
And she had a lot to do. You know, this was a complicated
yeah, in Korean,
role.
I might add.
In Korean.
A lot to do in Korean.
Yeah.
In this episode. So, you know, and English. So good for her. In fact, I think she speaks another language at some point.
Yeah, she was really very, very good. And it was a weird role, too, like so many of the roles on this show.
Yes. Yeah, it was a very weird role. yeah. This show, it's not quite – we talked about this a lot in The Shy. But this show really also has an eye for the sex scenes. You know what I mean? Like –
oh yeah!
You
yeah.
can tell that they are very considered the way that they shoot the sex on this show.
It does not feel as pulpy as The Shy began to, but it's definitely sexed up.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed. All right. You got any observations from the world of sports you want to do before we get to homework?
I don't know if there's too much to say about football. I think the biggest early season takeaways are just the tremendous amount of injuries in week two, which was disappointing. And you know, kind of heartbreaking.
I don't want to say not, expected.
I was going to say not entirely unexpected.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, there's that, and that stinks. But the other one is just, I think, we are seeing some old guys really get old right in front of our faces. And just how dramatic that is and how much is it, well, they're old and they need a few weeks to get the bodies going again or, you know, the short training camp really hurt guys who are, but like Drew Brees, Tom Brady, it looks like age is finally starting to catch up with some guys. But I don't think we can
possible. I want to throw with Brady, and God, I hate making excuses for Tom Brady. But I do team. Think there's also potentially a continuity issue
yep.
there.
Yeah, totally. And look,
as much as age.
And Drew Brees did not have Michael Thomas this week. So, like, he's got not excuses. He's got reasons for underperforming as well.
Yeah.
And I'm
and playing on grass, which we know is not his preferred mode.
And by no means am I saying they're both washed and useless. I'm just saying I think we're starting to see age on each of them in ways we have not before, even if they end up having pretty good years. So
it's absolutely undeniable that there are throws that Drew Brees doesn't make anymore. Like, you know, and that's
true of Brady.
That's the way it should be.
That's right.
You know, he's 40
it's
years
normal.
Old.
It's normal. It's
but
normal.
I can tell you as an NFC South fan, like,
oh, you're
it
still
used
scared.
To just be terrifying. Like, but it was, you know, it's like, oh my God, how are we going to stop this guy? Now he's just kind of scary. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's more their offense is scary more than he is scary. You know what I mean?
I think that's the difference. And he's a part of that offense, but not the, like, one and only driver of the bus.
Well, I mean, they're really a run team almost now.
Well, and just like whether they're a run team or a pass team, the talent between Kamara and Thomas and, I mean, even Emmanuel Sanders is really quite good. Jared Cook's a hell of a pass-catching tight end. Like, they have a ton of skill position talent there, and Drew Brees is just one of those guys to me at this point, which is
and
not
they're so
surprising.
Smart about the way they use Hill.
Yes. And know, again, they're,
this weird
he's
Swiss
40.
Army knife.
Yeah. So this all makes sense. But, yeah, I don't know that there's too much to conclude after 2 weeks. We'll be through a quarter of the season, as coaches like to say, next time we talk. So that might be a more interesting football conversation. Basketball-wise, let me just put it to you like this. The Heat are up 3-1 now. L.A. with a chance to go up 3-1 tonight. Who do you believe we'll be looking at in the finals next time we talk?
I was hoping to be able to gloat when we got to this point that the Lakers were up 3-0 and, you know, I could be like, see, I told you they were going to kick their ass.
Uh-huh. But I was right
I
again, as it turns out.
I can't do that.
I mean,
you're
I don't
probably
wanna
right.
Yeah.
I still think the Lakers are going to win this series.
Uh-huh.
And I think they might even do it in 5 or 6 games. But if they do that, then all those games are going to be competitive. Like,
yep.
It's not, you know,
it's not a mismatch.
Denver's here. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I still think Lakers Heat is going to be the series.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it would not shock me if Denver won tonight, and it would not shock me if they won the series. But if you ask me what I think is going to happen, I'm taking the Lakers. And then I guess the opposite
here's what I would say.
Would you write off? Are you ready to write off the Celtics? Because I'm not sure I'm ready to do that either.
No, not totally. Although do I think the Celtics are good enough to come back? Potentially, yes. Can I picture Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat blowing a 3-1 lead? Absolutely not. Does that make sense?
It's tough. Because they are so tough. Like,
they're so tough.
And
here's the thing.
You know, not that the Celtics aren't. I just think it's just going to be hard to beat them 3 in a row, no matter who you are.
Exactly. I think that's the perfect way to put it. And Tyler Hero, I don't know what this means for the future, for next year, any of that. But I know that right now, the Miami Heat's big three of Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, and Tyler Hero is outplaying whatever you want to say the Celtics' big three is. You know, Brown, Tatum, and Kemba, Brown, Tatum, and Hayward. Brown, Tatum, and Tice.
I mean,
doesn't matter.
To me, it's pretty clearly Brown, Tatum, and Kemba to me.
Yeah, I think that's probably true now. They might be a better team if it was Brown, Tatum, and Hayward with Kemba as sort of just an explosive scorer on the side, but whatever.
Well, you know, when we're talking about big threes, do you know what's wild? Do you know who leads the Heat in shots during the playoffs?
Is it Duncan Robinson?
It is not.
Huh. Is it Hero?
It is not. It is Goran Dragic.
Oh, that makes
and
sense.
And it's not that close.
That actually makes sense. Of course, I should have thought of that. He had some huge games in previous rounds. And look, Dragic is a huge factor. I'm not trying to minimize him. I'm just saying the way Tyler Hero is playing is good enough to be a top three player on a title team. I mean, that's how good this 20-year-old kid is playing right now. And not only is he playing that well, he is playing like that's who he is and has always been, despite the fact that he's a 20-year-old rookie.
If you dropped in from some other planet last night and watched that game and someone was like, who is the young player who is threatening his way into the All-NBA and, you know, maybe even MVP conversation? Like, you're not saying Jason Tatum, you're saying Tyler Hero, are you? You know, like that's, I think, how good he was last night. And I love his game. Like, I'm not saying he's as good as Jason Tatum is yet or anything like that, but his fearlessness and just, ability to either drive or hit from three if you leave him open, like, it's really fun to watch. You know, like, he is not a Duncan Robinson guy where, you know, you're just looking for him to spot up. Like, he's all over the place and just so unafraid. And, like, you know, big free throws at the end of the game, you had no doubt he was knocking those down, you know?
Yep. And, you know,
I was more confident in him than Jimmy Butler somehow, you know, which is just wild.
That confidence is a real asset in the playoffs, as long as you have the ability to back it up. But it is a real asset in the playoffs. And look, we can have all the discussions about what's he going to be next year, what's he going to be when there's fans in the stands again, you know, how good is he really? But right now, he's playing at a level that makes me believe the Heat can absolutely win a title. And I do think they will close out the Celtics. One interesting thing about Hero is he's now sort of the third guy following in the legacy of Devin Booker and Jamal Murray before him, who looked like one thing at Kentucky, came out, and now look like they have the ability to be true stars in this league. And I don't know exactly what to make of that, but it is interesting.
I think most guys, and I think some of it is the collection of talent that they generally have there, right? That most guys come in a class with four or five other stars at Kentucky. But I feel like most guys, you know, you could even say this about Anthony Davis or Karl Anthony Towns. Like, those guys, you know, they look like the man when they were at Kentucky. But they're definitely different kind of players there than they were, than they are in the NBA, you know, in terms of what they do skill-wise and whatever. I think it's something about Calipari. And I think it's something about the collection of talent that they put together at those schools that guys do sort of come out of there and then play differently when they head to the league.
Yeah. All of that's part of it. It is a little curious. Because I don't think the Calipari is doing anything that ought to keep guys from showing some of these skill sets. And also, I mean, to your point, sometimes, like in the case of Karl Anthony Towns, he hasn't played defense since he left Kentucky. So I don't know. Like, It's weird. And I guess that's true of all players. Like, college doesn't always look like the pros in terms of what a player does. But it is interesting that in succession, three guards have showed one thing at Kentucky, come out, and been like a really like another level of player from what I think most people expected them to be.
Yep. But, you know, they're also, I guess, the flip side of that are there are lots of Malik Monks.
Yep.
Too.
True story.
You know, who look like they're going to be something in the NBA and then turn out to be a lot less than that. Right?
Yeah. And at some level, that's true that, like, give and take that, you know, risk is part of all prospects. It's just that a lot of prospects happen to come from Kentucky because of how good Cal recruits.
Right. Yeah, they're just sending so many guys to the league every year. Can I talk real quick about my like least favorite announcing trend?
Oh man, it could be so many things. Go ahead.
It's now this idea that NBA players are inhuman, and that if they're like, if they have a bad half or a bad couple of games, that they must be injured. And we saw it most pronounced last night with Jason Tatum, where he goes, 0-for-8 in the first half. Yeah. And all the conversation at halftime is about he's not moving right. What must be wrong with him? They asked Stevens about it. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Let me ask.
And then
you,
guy
though,
comes out in the second half and lays up and throws up 28 points, right? And all of a sudden he's magically healthy. Like,
okay,
it's like guys can have a bad half or a bad game.
But did you think? Did you not think there might be something wrong? Like,
no.
I
just thought
okay.
he was missing shots. It's a make or miss league. I didn't think there was anything wrong with him.
All right,
you
Mark
know,
Jackson.
If you got Bam Adebayo at the end of the game holding his wrist, you know what I mean? Like that's one thing, but he was just missing shots. It happens.
Okay. I actually thought that stuff was a little justified as it regards Tatum last night, because I did kind of think he looked wrong. He looked to me like a guy who wasn't moving great. Like, he wasn't getting lift on his when he was jumping to shoot. I don't know. So I thought they were potentially onto something with Tatum. I guess as it turns out, they were onto nothing. So maybe you're right.
You didn't
but...
think that in the second half, right? When he was making all those shots, I'm assuming.
No, I mean, I guess I didn't. No, but in the first half, when a young star has an offer and like doesn't seem to be attacking the rim, I don't think it's crazy to wonder if something's wrong with him, I guess is all I'm saying. That
By the
being
way, that's
said,
part of the old example, like we talk about. With
well,
Brett,
that's what I was going to say.
And,
that's what I was going to say is yeah. I do agree with you that overall this is something that gets thrown out. And ironically, I would say that Jeff Van Gundy, who was the principal offender last night, is a guy who likes to say, hey, how come, why are we always giving, like, making excuses and saying guys are hurt when they don't play well? Like, sometimes guys just have bad, you know, like, he says that. So,
yeah, basketball's hard.
Right. So, like, I don't know. I did think it actually made some sense last night, although I'm with you overall.
Yeah, I find it annoying. And I feel like maybe LeBron started this with that year when the Cavs got their ass kicked by the Warriors and
he
just magically showed up
on.
In a cast.
Yeah, I mean, I look, but LeBron's the most famous athlete in the world, so it's easy to blame him for stuff. I think most stuff is probably not his fault, but whatever. He can survive.
Sorry, I'm not being serious about that being LeBron's fault.
Oh.
Sorry.
No worries.
Oh, all right.
You have to understand, I'm used to talking to people who do think stuff like that is LeBron's fault. So I have my answers of it's probably not LeBron's fault ready to go.
Oh, gotcha. LeBron hatred is so tired. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I just, you know,
it really is
for a guy whose life is so public.
Yep.
You know, he really makes so few missteps. The thing I think is his greatest misstep, I think, is really overrated as a misstep, personally. But
I
that's
agree.
Another story for
We
another
don't
day.
Need to do a segment on the decision, but I totally agree with that sentiment. I also think, like, what's annoying to me is that people don't recognize that all LeBron criticism is tired LeBron criticism. You know what I mean? That's what I think is dumb. Like, you know, everyone can look at Skip Bayless and say he's an idiot and he's trolling, right? I mean, because that's easy to do.
I don't even think about that, right, because I don't feel like that's good faith criticism. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
The Baylesses and the Whitlocks of the world.
Ugh,
we
don't
need
to talk about
it. It's not worth giving them the air. You know what I mean?
Agreed. But there's still so many people who then think, like, well, okay, that stuff's crazy, but he is 3-6 in the finals, and, like, that's a black mark on his record. And I just those people tire me.
Yep. You know, there's one of those series that he should have won.
Arguably.
But didn't. And then there's, I don't know, I feel like that one Dallas series is fairly inarguable that they were the best team. But I think you also have to go, you probably shouldn't have won the 3-1 Warriors one either. So
no. And he probably shouldn't have been in four of them. Yeah. You know? I mean, that's the real thing, because people do the same dumb thing. And look, I love looking for reasons that Tom Brady isn't actually the greatest quarterback of all time. I wish they existed. Like, trying to find them is a fun pastime. But they don't exist is the thing. And to somehow suggest that, you know, Joe Montana's better, Jordan's better because he only went to six finals, but he won all of them. That doesn't make any fucking sense to me. And I love Michael Jordan, and I would like to make the argument that he's the greatest player ever, but I just don't know that that argument makes sense anymore.
Yep. And we talked about it last week when we were sort of previewing the Denver series.
Yep.
Like, literally, my only reason was, like, well, I got LeBron, and he's got Davis with him.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And like, I think that's going to be enough. And we said maybe the next eight best players of the series might be on Denver.
Yeah, and look, so we are not going to do it now, because we'll have plenty of time if they win a title. But if they win a title, it's time to start talking about whether that's the greatest 1-2 pairing of players in the history of the sport. I mean, that's how good those guys are.
I'm not sure it is, but I think they're in the conversation. That's itself remarkable. And look, we can talk about Denver being a good matchup for them and being tough, but the reality is that Denver has to beat them 4 times out of 5 to win this series.
It's going to be very hard to do.
And I just don't, I don't know that you're going to beat LeBron 4 out of 5 times.
I think it's going to be incredibly difficult. So yeah. I'm pretty much with you on that.
So, and the only is just sort of Denver obviously has shown a flair for the semi impossible.
Uh huh.
So that's it. That's sort of why you keep hope alive. So,
well, that, and they have played them well. Like, I think, we correctly identified that depth was a problem for the Lakers in this series, and it continues to be that, but they're probably still going to win. I mean, I'm with you. If you made me bet the house, I would bet it on the Lakers. But if you made me bet $100, I'd bet it on Denver. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get you. But if I had told you before this series that Denver was going to blow a game because Mason Plumlee blew an assignment, right, like, that they kind of gave a game away,
you'd say
they're screwed.
That's problematic. Right? Yes. Yep.
So that's where we are.
But if you told me they were down 3-1 to Utah or to certainly the Clippers, I would have told you they were deeply, deeply fucked. So we'll see.
Indeed. Indeed. But it's almost essentially like they have to beat them 5 times now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I do know what you mean. And I concur.
Yeah. All right. So we've got a long week.
Long. To
October 6th will be the next time that we tape. That's a Tuesday.
Yes.
And so we're going to load you up with some stuff to watch.
Loading.
Between now and then. There's a show on Netflix called Sneakerheads.
We don't really know what it is.
I'm a sneakerhead.
Right. Like, this is like a whatever the opposite of a page one rewrite is. This is like a blind green light for us watching this show. That's how we're operating, based on the name.
Yes. Desperately hoping it's better than the time we said, let's watch the show about the craft beer guys.
Yeah, hoping it's also better than that time we said, let's watch the show about the nurse who ends up in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. Hey, sometimes we strike gold. Something that we are definitely looking forward to and can heartily recommend is the new season of Fargo.
Yes.
Chris Rock.
And not just Chris Rock. The cast of this show is you can tell this is a show that is like an anthology show that the industry is watching and wants to be in.
Yeah. Well, every season that great cast, really.
Yeah. But this definitely, I don't know, like Chris Rock, Jason Schwartzman, Timothy Oliphant, like I am very excited to watch this.
Yeah, me too.
Ben Whishaw. There's a lot of interesting people in this. Oh, and the woman from I'm Thinking of Leaving You, Jessie Buckley. Or I'm Thinking of Ending Things, rather.
Yes. I'm thinking of leaving. That's the, like, weird comedy show, isn't it? Or no, that's I Think You Should Leave, isn't that?
I don't know, man. I can't.
The Netflix, track. Yeah. I don't know. People love that show. We didn't.
Oh, that's the Tim what's-his-name. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
We did not love that.
We're going to semi-dip out of the toy department for the James Comey movie on Showtime called The Comey Rule.
Yep.
I said semi. You tend to hesitate a little bit more about this than I. I've loved a lot of the fictional political dramas that we've watched over the last couple of years.
Is it fictional or it's dramatized?
Dramatized, yes. Fictional is maybe the wrong word.
Yeah, I mean, I do think this is important.
But it's not a documentary.
Right. I think this is important stuff at an important time, and I hope it's good, I guess is what I'll say.
Yeah, me too. And look, the last Showtime thing in this vein was the Fox News show, which I thought was tremendous. So
the Fox News show?
That I'm trying to remember. That Roger, the show about Roger Ailes.
Oh, with Russell Crowe.
Yeah, which I thought was really great. Even if I can't remember the name of it right now.
No, you're right. That was really, really, really good. And why am I? I'm feeling like there's something else that.
The loudest voice in the room. Thank God. All right.
There you go. Good job. Yes, I think this could be good. And certainly, Jeff Daniels is a man who is pretty selective with what he's in and often quite good. So let's see it.
Agreed.
Also, fun fact, he has
shown a good feel for political material too in the past.
Agreed. And I don't know if you listened to him with Bill Simmons, but. I learned Jeff Daniels, one of the tallest actors in Hollywood, he goes about 6'2", 6'3", and he wore lifts so he could be even taller like James Comey.
That is such a Simmons topic.
although I don't think he brought it up, but definitely Bill Simmons was excited to talk about the height issue in Hollywood. But Jeff Daniels, brought it up because he was like, talking about, like, you know, actually you shouldn't ever meet your heroes, because I still can't get over, like, talking to Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone and I'm like 7 inches taller than them.
It's true. One last show that we've got is Utopia, which stars I don't think they're short John Cusack and Rainn Wilson.
I don't know about John Cusack. I can tell you that John Cusack is yet another Evanston Township High School great. And by the way, since we're doing this, I should also mention Joan, who never gets enough love when John Cusack gets brought up as an alumni of my high school. Shout out Joan.
I feel
love
like
Joan.
There are more Cusacks now, right? Like, there's another generation of Cusacks that are acting. Am I getting that wrong?
I'm not sure, but I know that the Pivens and the Cusacks are all North Shore people, and, like, you know, like, I have friends whose older brothers were, like, are buddies with those guys.
It's
all part of the Evanston High School family. With you know, Zach Guilford and Cassidy Hubbarth and who else? Lena Waith.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Chicago,
shout out
Chicago
Evanston.
Chicago rules.
It does. You're right that it does. You're correct. And with that, I feel like we've covered everything, right? Is that's the whole homework list?
I believe that is the entire homework list.
All right. And then we're also going to be, you know, I don't know if you care about this. I know I can just tell you for a fact that the wife and I are going to be watching this Enola Holmes movie, which probably is not something you're interested in. But if you watch it, we could chat about it. It looks like a, you know, lady. I guess there was a book series and it's like a young lady being Sherlock Holmes.
Actually.
What's that?
A young lady being Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, more or less. It's on Netflix. It's a movie.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Why not?
It's up to you. You don't have to watch it. If it looks interesting, go ahead and watch it. If I watch it and love it, I'll let you know. But as I think I have established on this podcast, all you need for a blind green light from me is the word Holmes in any project. So I'm good to go.
All right, it's levitation, Holmes.
It's levitation. All right, I think that covers it. Lots of football and some basketball in between as well. And we'll talk to you on October 6th.
Yeah, sounds good.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.